You are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Meow.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, Banyanya, episode 14. Sorry, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, episode 30, Cats Love Yoshikage Kira.
It's kind of a callback, yeah, to what we had been watching.
I could decide whether watching 3 months of Banyanya made me like this episode more or whether it had ruined this episode for me.
All right, but go back and watch Banyanya and imagine the cats as murderous.
When I was watching this and I was imagining, I wish it was the narrator from Banyanya doing this narration bit.
Yeah.
It was pretty great though. I don't know if they were taking, I assume they weren't taking like thing from Banyanya of having the narrator be the cat's voice, but that was amazing. I was just like, meow, said the cat.
He was doing this. Why am I here, Nya?
But he was also saying it entirely as the announcer, you know?
Yeah.
The JoJo's announcer, which is just, was just so perfect.
it made me doubly annoyed that they missed the episode. They missed the chapter of Parasite out with the lion doing the narration.
Right.
Everything told from the lion's point of view, because it was exactly like that bit. This was a good episode of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah, this was one of the few things coming into the show that coming into the season that I knew was going to happen. I knew a cat was going to turn into a plant.
This is the outside of the realm of what I had read in the comics. This was completely unknown to me.
Brilliant. Oh, dear.
So, at the end of last episode, we saw that there was an English blue cat in the basement. And we were like, that was the cliffhanger.
It wasn't really much of a cliffhanger. It's like, oh, look, a cat. Dun, dun, dun.
I love how the cat's writer has got sort of like an annoying smile on its face at all times.
So this episode, though, Shinobu flees out of the basement and into the arms of her husband, or the man pretending to be her husband.
He's more using an excuse to specifically do that. He's not into it. Well, he's into it in that he wants to strangle her, but he's not into it. He's like, strangling desire increasing. But so it's a weird comedy bit, this this episode. I can't reveal that I want to kill her and I have superpowers.
And the boss is coming over for dinner later on. What am I going to do? Wow.
It's quite the sitcom situation.
It's like, if only this had the Terry and June music to go with it. but as a viewer, we're like, what's gone on?
Mm.
Why is she panicking at that perfectly innocent cat we saw last episode?
He goes into great detail of her story as to why she panicked.
Yes, which is also quite comedic until she accidentally kills the cat.
Yeah, the whole thing of like, oh, I'll just pretend I'm not looking at him because then the cat won't get defensive. It's like, oh, I'll just pretend I'm a cat rolling on my back. And it's like, you are so stupid, lady. This cat wants none of it. And
there's the JoJo tradition of, you know, being entertaining as well as educational.
I suppose that's true, yeah.
But then the cat leapt onto the ceiling and started walking around on the ceiling, and she attacked it with a broom and accidentally killed it with some glass. Was it like a vase had shattered or something?
With glass shards and all, and then they come down and it's been like throat stuck full of these things.
Well, it already had a hole in its throat as well, so.
Yes, a mysterious hole.
Yes.
Arrow-shaped wound, perhaps.
So, Yoshikage, a.k.a. Kosaku, buries it in the garden. And the following day, or is it a couple of days later? I can't remember.
About 2 or 3 days.
That's what I thought, yeah.
It changes from like day to night to day again.
And there is a plant growing out of the grave. And when Shinobu sees this plant, the plant knows that it... Well, then we get all the narration about this very cat-like plant who's angry at this woman because he remembers it killing her. Oh, no, yeah. He remembers her killing it, rather.
And, through the narrator, kind of going like, who's this woman? with that broom. I remember that broom.
And blows her toenail off with its stand ability.
Glad that was Sensor. That was pretty gross. So yeah, she's freaking out, thinks that she's cursed because she killed a cat, I guess. Yeah. And is it after that point that...
It kills a bird which is passing and eats it, and then Kira shows up and is like, oh, that's a stand, I think.
Probably a stand because it's really fucking weird. And I'm going to go experiment on it and see if it's a cat.
It's behaving like a cat. Yes.
It's going to, like, you know, yes, it's...
Is it a cat and is it my enemy? Just all the little tests he can do for that. By holding its nose while it's asleep. It doesn't even have a nose or, like, lungs, so I'm not sure if
it's got nostrils, though. It's like, it's holding its nose. It's like, it's definitely pissed off at me, but it doesn't have any kind of hatred towards me, you know, no animosity, but it's definitely, it's very, very cat-like, definitely.
It's very cat-like, which is why it's such a good episode, because even though there's some bad bits of animation in this episode, none of it is on Stray Cat. Stray Cat is... No.
They really put the animation into that, which is important. Yeah.
Yes, because it's like, how could we convince the viewer that this plant is a cat? And they do a really good job of it.
Mm.
I think they changed the design slightly from the manga to make it more cat-like.
Yeah, isn't it more like a... what were those things in Alice in Wonderland? They were... the flowers? Yeah. I think there was something like that. Wasn't it more like that? It had more...
I think so, yeah.
Mm. But really, really good animation on this one.
But then Shinobi turns up again. He tries to stop it from seeing her.
He's just trying to get his knee in the way. It's like, honey, that's that creepy place where you buried the cat. I didn't bury the cat here. It's like, I'm pretty sure you did. You're just doing that to spare my feelings now, but I'm pretty sure it's haunted.
And then we get the battle between him and this cat. And the cat in the back garden. He's probably the guy who's giving him the... biggest run for his money so far in a fight.
Because besides whatever the stand ability of when you die, you turn into a plant, it also has the ability to control air?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how that works, but okay.
It makes air bubbles, I think. So they're like vacuum bubbles or something like that. Yeah.
It's because he tries to make a little timer bomb rock so he can blow up the cat. It's like, sorry, cat, I got to blow you up. But his powers don't work in a vacuum. Which is something that another one of those weird kind of JoJo rules.
Yes.
No, that makes sense. You know, it needs oxygen to combust. So
I suppose, yeah.
If it isn't there, it can't do it.
But yeah, it almost is like another bit of his psyche being cracking at that point. Where it's like, this power that I know how it works is suddenly not working. And the cat just bats it away.
Yeah, and he's basically losing to a house cat because it's just reacting in a lot of ways that's very cat-like.
The narrator is constantly reminding us that it's acting on instinct, so it knows how to use its stand powers far better than any human so far has used their stand powers.
It just goes like, oh, cool, I can shoot sparrows out of the sky. Awesome.
Shoot, I know that if I send an air bubble into his vein and get it to his heart, it will kill him. How does a cat know that instinctively?
Cats know about surgery. Come on. I mean, like, Kira says, I don't know a lot about surgery, but I know that this amount of air, that if it gets into my brain, I will die. And I was just like, you seem to know a lot more than you claim, dude. Don't sell yourself short.
You watch a lot of ER. Yes.
And then Kira manages to use his final defense, which is to throw a golf ball at the cat.
He does that by instinct. He seemingly doesn't know what to do when he throws the ball and the cat starts... Well, the plant starts playing with the ball.
Yeah, but instantly distracted from what he was trying to do before.
If this is just like a cat, and I think it is, this plan may be crazy enough to work.
Yes. So I like how he's not only like losing badly to a cat, but a not particularly smart cat.
Yes, and also he's like, because he saved Shinobu, he's like, why am I, Kira, trying to save this woman?
Do I feel relief?
Yes.
You know,
he thinks he's got feelings that he talks himself out of the idea that he has feelings.
I think it's probably be along the lines of no one's going to like murder her brutally except for me. This is my patch I've staked out for myself.
Mm.
And then we get, first of all, he pretends that he's taken the cat's body and buried it somewhere further away. But actually, he's put this plant inside the attic.
Yeah, and we see the what's the little kid's name again?
Hayato.
Hayato's continuing investigations. It kind of throws him that his dad has eaten shiitake mushrooms, which his wife reminds him, "Oh, honey, I thought you hated those. That was my plate of food." And he's just like, "Oh shit, I've been stuffing my face." That was pretty good kind of moment where he's just really bad at pretending to be this guy, but his wife is too dumb to notice.
Yeah, he's like, "I got to get shoes which fit me. I've been walking around in these shoes." So he's in the house, he's always wearing slippers.
That wouldn't be like the biggest giveaway, but the kid is onto this.
Kid's getting evidence.
He's actually been planting different size shoes in there, seeing which ones he wears.
Yeah, it was like, well, he had to use the shoehorn on those shoes. Okay, so that tells me. And the Kira hasn't noticed this at all. He's also looking into his video footage and seeing that his dad is writing his name over and over again. That's weird.
True to looking glass, people.
This is a weird kid.
And so,
I mean, like, he's right to be worried. Yes. But he's weird.
So he decides to investigate his parents' room because he sees that his dad is taking grow bags and cat food
into the bedroom,
into the closet.
Whatever you enter.
Daddy needs his alone time.
So he starts investigating, goes into the attic, but then Kira comes home. He's like, he sees the kid's hat there. That kid's onto me.
The kid has gotten manacled with air.
Yes.
By the cat plant. By stray cat, I should just call him by his name.
But he manages to outwit him.
By using his handy dandy protractor.
Yeah, turns out those bubbles, because they're only made of air, are quite easily popped.
Mm.
The problem is you can't see them.
Not much good for grabbing, but good for shooting you.
Yes. Yeah. And then he realizes, that cat needs the light, or that plant needs the light if I close the window, which it does anyway because the air blows out the bubble.
I thought that was just a really well-timed stab into the air bubble.
By stabbing at this angle, account for Earth's rotation, ensures blood will not load.
And then he frames the plant.
That was pretty quick thinking.
Yeah.
Because obviously he initially tried to jump out the window, and then the cat was coming alive again. He's like, shit, okay, can't go out the window. So, basically leads a trail of cat food and leaves the cat bag up by it. And Kira's like, it looks like a little bit of light was getting in, and he stole the cat food.
And now I shall say something very incriminating, just in case that child is somewhere else in this room.
Yeah, saying aloud, like, good thing that child isn't here, because if he found out who I really was, I would have to kill him. It's just like, why would you say that out loud, dude?
He's not here, so it's okay.
He's the evil man.
Yeah, basically.
He's boasting to the cat. He's now got an accomplice, you see.
Yeah, I don't think his photo dad is doing a great job, considering it's just like, this caused him nearly more hassle than it was worth, I think. Giving him this ally or distraction or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty much the episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're left. The last shot is Hayato inside a box looking very panicked at discovering the thing he thought was true is true.
Mm. It's seen too much.
Yeah. If only he had ignored this murderous man in their midst, he'd be perfect.
If only he wasn't acting like a little creep, filling with his parents, he wouldn't be in this mess.
Yeah, because seriously, before that, like, the first time he sees the footage from his parents' home, it's like, looks like mom and dad are having sex again. That's weird. And I'm just like, what the fuck, kid? What is wrong with you?
It's the 90s.
Everyone was filming everybody else.
Yes. Actually, I'm pretty sure there was a lot of
does it.
I'm pretty sure there was a lot of fiction about that sort of thing, wasn't there?
Yeah, okay.
Around the early 90s.
Well, I guess it's even easier now. You don't even have to use clunky videotapes to look through stuff. Oh, dear. Yeah, really fun episode. Really weird episode. Because it's like, am I supposed to be rooting for Kira that he doesn't get caught I'm rooting for him so that he doesn't murder his entire fake family. That kind of way. I'm not exactly sure what I'm supposed to be feeling.
I thought also the main question that hangs over for me is that, okay, I guess that stand ability lets you control the air, but how and what part of that transfers your consciousness to this weird plant thing? Like, that's kind of being overlooked here. You can say, you can put it down, oh, that's this ability to understand, but, you know, it's seems to be a pretty specific set of sort of things that happen, that, you know, that the cat had to be killed and then buried, and then it'll turn it into the plant that has the power to control the air. It's a very particular set of abilities.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only way I could think of, like, if the cat controlled water or something, which we've already seen anyway, so that's not going to be a thing, but that it, like, its soul matriculated up into a plant kind of thing, but it doesn't quite work when your power is air-based, you know? It's a weird one, but that's the show. I mean, like, that, it's kind of like the last episode where, what was the deal with that room? It's like, no idea. Yeah. No fucking clue.
I guess maybe the cat separate a stand ability to set its own kind of powers of reincarnation or spiritual.
Oh yeah, maybe that was the cat's abilities before it became a stand user.
Yeah.
I've ate the flower fruit, and at one time when I die, I can turn into a plant.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sliver is the film I was thinking of.
That I was just thinking of that as well, but I wasn't certain.
Yeah, 1993, so it's around the right time for that to be an influence.
It's an influential film, but super gross.
No, not Slither. Slither.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
I don't think there was any CCG. I said not CCTV in Slither.
Not to my knowledge, not.
No. Handily, I remembered it by looking at the Wikipedia page, list of films featuring surveillance.
Sneakers.
So, when did Pet Sematary come out?
That was a good point. Yes.
Oh, that was like back in the 80s. Of course, we already had Pet Sematary. Was
that's
Judgment?
Right. Yeah, you're right. Might have been something else then that required burying cats and whatnot. Oh shit! What's that? Oh, it's a Japanese horror film. No, there's a Japanese film about, like, a ghost of a cat or something.
Oh, there's plenty.
Yeah, I know.
Yokai Watch.
Okay.
I suppose that's true, yeah. Oh, dear.
Yeah, I wonder now, with this in the anime, they'll be fan art of Stray Cat meeting Jibanyan.
Or will there be a Jibanyan who's a plant?
Oh, there definitely is ones already.
Give them time, they will.
There's a whole load of fruit ones, so.
Okay.
I think they count.
And then a crossover with Bananya. A multimedia cat and one other thing based media empire.
Okay, that was JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for this week. On to Dragon Ball Super, episode 62. I will protect the world! Trunks' furious superpower explodes! But more importantly, at the very end of this episode, they bring out a really deep cut, which made me so happy.
What, yeah. This one?
The Mafuba.
Oh, I thought they were going to reference initially the... what's the film with Garlic Jr. in it?
Dead Zone.
Yeah, because that's the only other time I can think of how they had to deal with someone who was immortal. And it wasn't that they threw him into like another dimension or something, but it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, they didn't get him to literally send him to another dimension.
Yeah.
Because the guys get beaten again, and they gotta retreat back to the past again.
Well, that's because they went straight back to the future with no fucking plan as to dealing with the information.
Yeah,
they now knew.
It's all for the same planet. This time we won't lose.
Yeah, that was the extent of their plan. It's like, okay, now you know he's immortal. What's the new plan? Well, we'll fight him again.
The plan was remember the beans.
I guess, yeah, that was a considerable advantage that they didn't have the last time.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I forgot even last week when they were just showing that the last episode, like replay there, how besides Goku getting stabbed in the chest, he also got gunned down with like laser needles, so he's like full of holes.
He's one hole like straight through him, and like his whole front section is full of like tiny little holes. Yeah. He's not doing well.
we didn't know they'd had some kind of weird tag team maneuver that was like way more powerful than we anticipated.
Well, they're the same guy, so that does make sense.
Yeah.
that they would have teamwork in the way that you can work with yourself.
Yeah, I think that your plan would be want to be split them up so they can't fight you both one at a time.
Yeah, Vegeta's initially standing by and is like, I'm watching you, regular Zamasu. And Zamasu's like, okay, teleports over and kicks Goku. It's like, son of a bitch! Or sorry, kicks Trunks.
Yeah, still entirely sure what Trunks' new power-up is.
No, just getting angry, I think.
Really mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of getting close to going Super Saiyan Blue, but not quite still.
Righteous justice, I don't know.
there's like a bit. There's definitely an undertone in this episode of Vegeta getting annoyed that Bulma is like the key to defeating them is Goku.
Oh, yeah, that was great because he was about to interrupt. It's like, motherfucker, Goku doesn't always save the day, okay? I could do it too if I felt like it. That was pretty great. Yeah. He was about to unload them, but then like Chi-Chi came along.
Talking of unloading, my favorite bit is the bit where Bulma is getting ready to punch Beerus in the back of the head.
Yeah. And Beerus is like, is he aware of it? Is he just going like, just try it, motherfucker. Just try it. But it seems more so that Vegeta's like, dude, don't punch the God of Destruction in the back of the head. It's probably a bad idea.
Yes, because she's not best pleased that the future hadn't been fixed despite Beerus assuring them that this would be the case because he's a god.
Oh, be a god. You say, once I destroy something in the past, it stays destroyed forever. No one can stop the god of destruction's destruction. No. And he's like, oh, I guess Trunks Khan was right. And it's like, fuck you, buddy. We nearly died.
I was 80% sure. That's much better than half. Come on.
And also Chi-Chi getting annoyed at Goku not defeating a guy who killed an alternate reality Goten.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm kind of with Beerus to some extent. I'm like, dude, fucking, I mean, like, it sucks for future Trunks and all, but none of this is going to happen in your timeline, so we're cool. But yeah, as soon as Chi-Chi hears this, it's like, oh, wait, we get killed? Fuck that guy. Mess him up. Oh, dear.
Yeah. But apparently, we got one guy who's immortal, and we got one guy who's going to get like more powerful and powerful as it goes on. He's also like just as skilled as the guy who's immortal, and the kicking our asses. What are we going to do? And then they dig up. Well, as soon as something this happened, we had to do this thing. We had to first, if you can't beat him, just lock him up. And
yeah, how do we deal with immortal people?
Poor Piccolo.
Comes up
with the idea.
Yeah. And it's the standard thing of they've just, and it bugs me. It bugs me in a way that's kind of funny because I love Piccolo, but they've just gone like, hey guys, he's useless now. It's like, oh, I know that move. Let me teach you to Goku. He's like, I'll just go to Kami's house. I'm not listening to you, Piccolo. Who fucking listens to Piccolo? Bye. And I'm just like, Piccolo's just like, and everyone else in the room is going, you can show us if you like. It's just such a like, but you guys don't have superpowers.
So dejected.
And then
so
Goku learning the favor as well.
Oh my god. And then fucking abusing a turtle. What is this? Fucking JoJo's here. Come on. Poor Kami. Has he had any lines in this show up to this point?
I can't remember.
Not since the boat, I think.
Yeah, he might have had all something on the boat. All right, you're right. Yeah, and all he's done is getting flung the fuck around and thrown into a pot. Oh, poor bastard.
It takes him like 3 times and he's got it, so.
Well, it takes him all night.
Yeah.
And he flings him across the ocean several times.
He's a turtle, he'd be grand.
I don't know, dude. He's old.
But yeah, I do like the idea of pulling that stuff out of Dragon Ball rather than Dragon Ball Z, which of course has made people who only watch Dragon Ball Z scratching their heads. Having to have it explained to them what it was.
There was another Piccolo? What?
Yeah, because even the little kid guys, they react to, wait, Evil King Piccolo? Wait, are you Evil King Piccolo? They've just completely forgotten about him since Dragon Ball. I thought that was a nice reaction.
No, I know, I'm formerly the Evil Piccolo Jr., who is now actually a nice guy.
Just regular Piccolo now.
Yes. And also I liked Pilaf Gang's reaction, because obviously they were in league. With
yeah,
sort of in league, being used by him basically.
They lent them the airplane, I suppose.
Yes. Well, they thought they were going to get like a quarter of the world. It was all going to be split up, and yes, fools once more. Maybe that's why they laid low during all of Dragon Ball Z, recovering from that embarrassment.
Well, at that stage, if you didn't have superpowers, you weren't really much involved in the plot.
No.
Which is why Bulma wasn't involved much in the plot in Z, with the exception of, I guess, Namek and shit. But this was a really fun episode. There was a lot of, again, it does this really nice balance of kind of comedy, and the first part of the episode is your classic Dragon Ball Z shouting and screaming. So it's got a little bit of everything you could want.
Hey, guess what, guys? It's been simulcasted, and we can watch it on Daisuke. Daisuke have got our country's licenses, so.
Oh, kind of annoying about the Crunchyroll thing, but now what are you going to do?
It's fine. Well, maybe we'll finally see other toy properties come here, like, legally streaming. Go different routes to do so.
Yeah, if a thing is available legally, I'll absolutely do it that way. But it is kind of a balls when that happens.
Yeah, and also you're going to have less chance of running into the dodgy subtitles.
That's true,
some liberties with actual script, or just had any effort put into it at all.
Yeah.
Right, talking of things which may have slightly dodgy scripts, Bono. This week's episode is called Sometimes I Feel Lonely, episode 15.
Oh, this is kids' first existentialism, yeah.
Yes, it was like, kids, how to pass existential dread. I
thought it was really successful. I thought it did a really good job.
But I do wonder whether lonely is like a fudge of a translation of whatever Japanese word they're using.
That's what I was thinking as well, that there mightn't be an English equivalent.
Yeah,
for the emotion they're talking about.
Mm, well, you know how you feel with like exactly what's going on. I'm playing with all you guys, and I'm surrounded by my friends, but I feel just alone, like in the universe.
Yeah, just the idea that even when you're with other people, that the concept of being alone in yourself and of yourself can hit you at any time. And I was like, what a fucking big thought to try and get across, Raccoon.
And the fact that it's him as well, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of perfect, because he is like the most, I guess, maladjusted one.
Yeah, you don't expect him to have that sort of deep thought.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it, man. You know, he has these things, but he just acts out to try and cover up the vulnerability he feels when these feelings hit him.
Maybe he's not so bad. Well, he probably is, but, you know. Mm.
Who was it? Should we go to talk to about? Was it like
Badger?
I thought it was Wolverine's dad.
Yeah, and sorry, it's like, yeah. Well, I feel this for sometimes. So, like, what do you do about it? Here? Do this? You throw some rock. The rock just says, "Everybody is alone." It's like, whoa.
Well, it's initially the thing of, isn't it? Like his, like, don't you ever feel alone? I was like, no, I never feel lonely. And then he goes like, "Hey, Dad, where are you going?" And his dad just looks back at him with like a disappointed kind of look and keeps walking. And he's like, "Nope, never felt lonely." And it's just like, "Whoa, Jesus, what kind of life do you lead, kid?"
As you say, it's for a kid's show to handle this sort of topic and then to handle it this well. Mm. Even though I kind of feel like the translation might be a little clumsy.
It might be a little muddled. That's fair.
It is a really good episode. And the reason I say that is that there's another show which we don't talk about on the podcast, which definitely has a clumsy translation, and that is Tiger Mask W. Double, rather. That it feels like it needs somebody who knows about wrestling to take a look at the script and say, you can reword that. Sometimes it feels a bit like a literal translation.
Right.
Rather than translated into the equivalent English term for that situation.
Yeah. Especially like wrestling terms that have different Western terms.
Yeah, they're quite often referring to things as tournaments. And I think they just mean like a show rather than an actual tournament, because there never seems to be a tournament taking place.
It's always like one-off, sure.
Yeah.
But I thought, like, as I kind of thought about it, where Raccoon, is that, was it a rock or was it a turd? I wasn't entirely sure
myself.
This is a rat.
Yeah, he just kind of holds it up to his head. And again, it's that thing where people think like existentialism, oh, it's really depressing and stuff. It's like, no, when you take it into account that when you think about everyone gets lonely sometimes and that makes you feel less alone because you're having that, for lack of a better term, because we're talking about animals here, human experience that everyone else is having. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of comforting. There's a kind of a comforting and understanding there. And I was like, yeah, it's a really fucking high concept to try and get across. I'm surprised at how well it did it, despite fudge translations. Yeah.
In 5 minutes as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can always just try and laugh it off. There were some good faces in this episode. You know.
That's true, yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the way it's sometimes, what is it? Squirrel got lonely brushing his teeth, wasn't it?
Chipmunk, yeah.
Sorry, chipmunk. And Bono got lonely when he had to go to sleep.
Yes.
But he felt great in the morning, so, you know, it all worked out. Oh, dear.
Okay, on to Shonen Ashibe, Go Go Gomachan, episode 19, Mr. Tendo's marriage meeting.
Oh.
I knew I was in for a good time as soon as I saw that title.
And we should mention, I noticed that one of those kids shows that Nabashin had worked on in the past was the previous two series of Shonen Ashibe, Go Go Gomachan.
Angel is often watching over us.
Yeah, so I don't know if he was on this episode. I could easily believe it, though, because it was another wacky, crazy Mr. Tendo situation where the other teacher is worried that he's going to embarrass himself at this marriage meeting. So she holds etiquette classes for the kids and asks him to help out. But they're really, she confides with the children that they're really for him.
Yeah, we got to help out Mr. Tendo. He needs to get married. Maybe he'll get his shit together.
Yeah.
Damn.
And yeah, within the confines of the lesson, he seems like he knows exactly how to behave.
Yeah, I loved all that kind of her reaction to him, of him like, that's right, kids. And also some information that is entirely relevant and correct. And she's like, holy fuck, do you know what you're doing? That's amazing.
But then they go and spy on him at the marriage meeting. And no, he does not know what he's doing.
Look at my muscles.
Which leads to him getting punched in the face by the woman he's meeting.
Well, she took up the other teachers, the homeroom teachers, kind of, you need to be direct with him. And she's like, right. Punches him in the face. He's like, I can take it. Come on.
just so you know, man, after a little meeting, I apologize, Mr. Tendo's like behavior there. He's, you know, taking the opportunity now to have a good long hard look at himself in the mirror. Oh, well, that's good. As long as he's considering what he's done. And he is doing that, but not in the way you would.
He's doing that literally, not figuratively. Yeah.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, I look good. Just there's a lot of good in this episode. I think my favorite bit was where it's like he takes his advice, and he takes his own advice that he gave. That I think Ashibi shouts it from the bushes. And he's like, that kid's right. And he hasn't even thought that the kids are spying on him. Yeah. But he starts defying the laws of physics by turning into a fan or something.
Yes.
That was amazing.
And there's one little subtle thing of them constantly having to hold Gomma to prevent him going into the pond, which is where they are.
That's right, yeah.
Eating all the koi.
Brilliant.
Yeah, good show. Enjoy it when they focus on the humans, especially when Mr. Tendo's in it.
Mm. Is he like the best character now? I mean, like, I know that's high praise.
I quite like when the granddad shows up.
That's true, yeah.
With his ridiculous, I'm super rich, I'm going to behave like a maniac.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, besides Sego and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, like the whole like thing in
the show.
It could be its own show. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, there's loads of characters still to show up.
Brilliant.
According to the Wikipedia page. Some of them are from the sequel, so they won't show up. But there's like the maternal grandparents are characters, and we've not seen them yet either.
Okay.
One thing I want to say about this. It's gone, so never mind. Let's move on. Ninja Girl and Samurai Master Episode 3. Attack! Imagawa-san next door.
I imagine this would be a lot funnier if I knew the history better. You know?
Yeah, but just know what ninjas are. You know.
Yeah.
Well, if I knew more about the Nobunaga kind of period and that kind of thing, which I should know at this stage from watching anime.
Well, this one weirdly seems to be more historically accurate.
Yeah,
than most are.
Mm. Like Nobunaga is just a lord rather than a demon or some other fancy thing.
And that thing about the guy claiming that he'd got more soldiers than he had is historically accurate.
Right. Okay.
So basically, he sends them over to spy on Imagawa-san and just to see if the amount of soldiers that he claims he's got are actually the amount of soldiers he does have.
Mm. I love the way like she's trying to spy on him, but he's like shouting very loudly. It's like, I'm totally going to invade! And they're like, my lord, shut up. People could be listening outside the gates. Yeah, so they really didn't have to do that much spying.
No. And then she sneaks into his room and draws a picture on his face.
Because he insulted Nobunaga, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Which makes Nobunaga think, oh, she was over to assassinate him if you get him that close to him. But,
yeah,
it's all right. Good job.
I did like the thing of her ninja technique of, because she has an awful memory of remembering all the facts and details of the invasion and shit. She just has to keep stabbing herself. And it was just like this, again, they're kind of sticking the really messed up stuff into the, into the cutesy ninja girl thing.
Yeah. And it's like realistic ninja stuff. It's not, you never see Naruto repeatedly stabbing himself to remember something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, she does that little ninja walk thing where she's walking on her own hands, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
I wonder what it is, yeah.
I think it's just like so you can kind of quiet the movement because you're spreading it out more.
But at the same time, it does use the trope of someone's talking, you sneeze means someone's talking about you.
But that's a plot device.
It is, yes. Yeah. Someone is talking about both of them, and so, but he's, because Imagawa was louder, it clouds
it
the sound
her
of her sneeze.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's exactly as it has been in all previous weeks. It's just gag, gag, gag.
Yeah.
3 minutes over.
Yeah. It's pretty cute.
Yeah. On to Bungo Stray Dogs, episode 16, Bungo Stray Dogs. I have to admit, I didn't watch this at all.
Yeah, I think he probably would have been fine, dude.
It's fine. I just fucking skimmed through it.
It's probably the best one of the episodes so far because there was a fucking fight in it. Like, you know, they actually used some animation rather than two dudes sitting in a room fucking talking.
It was still...
There was loads of that.
It was still woefully directed, though, because it was still like, you know, when they get to the competition at the end after having a little bit of a fight and they're explaining their ideologies to each other. This goes to, like, medium-wide shot of Odonosuke, medium-wide shot of the terrorist leader, medium cut back to the medium-wide shot of... Just going between the two shots every bloody time for a good, I think, 3 or 4 minutes.
Yep, that went on way too long. Because I was like, wow, that fight actually was well animated. And I was like, oh no.
That's all you get.
I'll read the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, no, I'll try. We'll try and sum it up. Can we sum it up?
Don't worry about it. Just tell me that it ended. That's all I want to know.
It's over. It's skipped. And in
is
the
it
end, no
skip
one,
the next one?
In the end, no one seemed to be dead. You know, it seemed to be like the guy who was a double agent was actually a triple agent working for the government all along and trying to play the two sides up against each other and get all the information that he was quest asked to get. So I guess he's not actually dead, maybe like figuratively like dead to them because he's been deceiving them all this time or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, something along those lines. And it's like he says, oh, I'm going to meet you at the old bar. And Dazai says, like, oh, I'll get out of here before I kill you. Kind of thing, and it's just like, I don't care about you guys.
And of course, because it's based on the light novel, and I guess because the characters in it are based on writers, we have a story, you know, the kind of motivation behind what's his face, Odonosuke, the premonition powers. He, you know, it's basically writing about being a writer, which is the most shite you can ever come across. It can be done well, but it's
so he doesn't
not,
kill people. Because the random fucking shadow of a dude in his past when he was a little kid said, hey, you're reading a book, I see. Are you reading part 3? And he's like, no, I can't find part 3 of the book. And he's like, well, you should write it because writing is like creating life. And it's like, ah, so if I want to create life, that means I can never kill because that's the opposite of creating life, I guess. And I could never retire and become a writer. And I was just like, what? It's really kind of like, protracted and shit. So he's explaining this ideology to the head of Mimic, who has the exact same powers as him. So yeah. It's like, I was going to shoot you, but I saw you dodge to the left. So I adjusted my aim to the left. And the dude said, I saw you kill me when I adjusted my aim, when I moved to the left and you adjusted your aim to the left. So I moved to the right.
That's
and
it's like,
well, I saw you were going to do that. So we're caught in a stalemate here. And I was just like, oh my God. This is the most boring way to show predictive powers.
It wasn't cool like in Thunderbolt Fantasy when we're just sitting down at a table like, you know, having a nice chat and imagining, you know, if I was to flip over the table and draw my sword and try to cut his head off, what would he do?
Yeah, because that was like basically two guys who are having a civil conversation with total killing intent. That was a nice way of doing that kind of scene, and this one completely doesn't do that. Oh, dear.
So a bunch of stuff goes down. Nothing really happens. but just so you know that we're probably going to see these guys again at some point in the future. They'll probably at least bring in Permission Guy again.
Sure? Because I'm reading the Wikipedia page and it seems to indicate that he's quite dead. So are you sure there's not another episode?
There might be another episode of this based off this, because how this episode ends, right? You remember that friendly old man who minded all those orphans and shit like that? Right, guess what happened to him? Take 5 seconds to think and guess what happened. They're all fucking dead. They killed the old man, they put the kids in a van that exploded, and he made your man cry a lot, and he's like, come and get me, and I'm just like, fucking, I don't care about this Joker fucking bullshit.
Was that the very end?
Yeah.
Okay, there's another episode then.
I figured there was at least another one, and I'm like, I'm so done with this.
So it's not over?
He has to go fight the guy who we don't care about.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I thought that was it. I thought that was done with it because
you raised my hopes, Niall, with your tweet. I thought,
I thought this is done with as well. I thought, okay, they found their friend or whatever like that, and he's actually not their friend, and they're going to sort of separate ways, and then we might get back to the main fucking story we want
to
see.
No. There's still somebody to die. And as you guessed,
it's going to be this guy, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who said somebody dies in this story.
But we know it's not Deadeye because he can't kill himself to save his life.
Yeah.
We know it's not the other guy because he ran off and we're probably not going to see him again, except he's going to come up into it later when it's actually the fucking sequel we're watching. And so it's probably the narrator. So it's like, one of us died. It's like, is it the guy who's talking as we kind of figure out?
I hope it's you.
I'm the nicest guy in the Port Mafia. I could beat everyone. I'm like, I don't care.
Anyway,
you're a real light level character, you saw you were.
Did you watch Flip Flappers this week?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to speak briefly on it? Because I didn't.
All right. So you know Fist of the North Star, and then Dragon Ball, it turns into Dragon Ball Z, and then it turns into, I guess, kind of a cross between Sailor Moon and Cutie Honey.
But again, the magical girl.
Again, the magical girl thing. But it's focusing a lot on the butt. So I'm like, I'm going to go with Cutie Honey here, the magic girl thing. But am I missing anything else they kind of done as well? Mad Max.
I thought, like I said, I'd go into different kind of fairy tales and going in this, but no, we can go to any kind of things. We go to this sort of Mad Max, Fist of the North Star analog. And they become separated, and Coco now has been fallen under the trance of this weird shadow elf lady person.
I'm not entirely clear what the deal is with her.
They fight for a bit when she breaks her control over that, and then they still got to defeat this one, but then they kind of harness their powers and they can do like a full-on magical girl transformations, and they're battling her away. It's a pretty cool looking fight, but they can't quite best her just yet. Luckily, other magical girls show up, I don't know, we're in the fucking one shot. She melts down and takes it. It's another little fragment of thing that trying to collect for whatever reason we're trying to get them for. And the head of this other squad is Coconut's best friend from school in the real world. She was actually in on this business all along. Who knew?
Yeah, but she's working for a different crowd than they're working for. It looks more like a big old religious cult type situation.
Yeah, they escape by a warp hole, and Pappy Cat is kind of, where are you going? He just sticks her head through to see what's going on the other side. We see her, like, her head and her hands get kind of pulled through some kind of physical wormhole, like, stretched across time and space, and then peeks the other side, and the guy's there, this massive facility, wearing like very ominous looking uniforms, and just like the whole room just kind of turns to look at her. It's like, oh, sorry, I'll get out of here. Whoa.
Yeah.
So worth catching up on?
See, the thing is, like, it's still not got that kind of that hook of plot, because it's just kind of like, what is happening? I don't really know. I don't know if it doesn't want to tell us, like, to reveal too much, or is there just not that meat on its bones in the first place? But it's really nice looking. That's the main fucking draw of it. And sometimes there's really funny bits, like it introduces the random fucking woven gang of bikers, like the Mad Max Fist of the North Star dudes, and they're all like cyclopses or something. But later on, when it cuts to like a faraway distance, there's a man, one of those Cyclops people, and a little kid one coming out of a supermarket. And I just thought, it was like, what is this world? This is kind of fucking cool. And it sticks in stuff like that. That's okay. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's mainly for the animation. That's the reason why I keep coming back anyway.
Yeah, but and there is something going on.
Yeah.
In the real world, you know, because Coconut, she lives at home with her granny, and you know, I think there's something up with that granny. Like,
it seemed to be suggesting, like, when she came home late and she missed cram school hall and said you didn't come, you know, and it seemed to be suggesting, it's like, is she gonna fucking go off on her at this rate? But it didn't happen, so the kind of implying that something's going on there, yeah.
It just seems just too ominous in its sort of I guess banality is what I'm saying. This is like happening, you know, all that's happened to the weird fantasy world in the majority of this one. Then the post credits bit is her going home to her granny and, you know, I'm sorry, yeah. I missed cram school later on. I said, why would that be the post credits bit? It wasn't going to be something that's going to be touched upon. And like, they mentioned that little, like, Coconut or Papico, either of them is, you know, oh, yes, they're part of the something or other thing that'll be integral to the story of the show, I imagine. So I feel like, you know, Coconut's everyday life is just a construct designed to kind of keep her hidden or safe, or, like, you know, try and keep her away from all this business, so she isn't
awakened
to her potential or whatever that is.
Like, the other thing that was saying is, like, the villain in this episode, the villain where it turns into a big monster, that girl, she suggests that Coconut has, like, she's empty. There's nothing going on there, which is why she was easily mind wiped in the episode, kind of thing, or mind controlled, I should say. So there's some suggestion of some stuff going on there, but again, it's all kind of inferring right now, so it's hard to tell how much depth it has with that regard, you know.
Yeah, it's from definitely from a visual standpoint we're watching, but if you're uncertain about it, you want to take a little more to latch on to, you may want to maybe hang on for a little while longer. I have to finish just to see how it all shakes out in the end. But
I'm still enjoying it for the animation alone. So yeah.
In return for this report, I shall give you a report.
Excellent.
Hey Bot.
Ah no.
This week's episode. Hey Bot's love interest was introduced in an episode with lots of Die Hard references.
Who's this show for?
She's a palette-swapped Haybot, basically, right, who pilots a human body from inside the head. So all through the episode, you're like, oh, that's a human woman with a screw in her head who's in love with Haybot. But, like, at the very end, this sort of pink and white Haybot pops out the back of the head. And that's where the screw's attached to. And, yes, she's piloting this human body. That's all which really happened.
Is there a plot?
Well, I rewatched some of episode one, and I have to say, there is, and the episodes improve the more times you watch them.
You're not going to trick me, though.
Because it's now clear to me in that opening bit where you've got, what's his name? Man Driver, the... That is clearly the prince wearing Haybot as battle armor.
Okay.
As an adult. Because they've got the same eyebrows. And when you look at the battle armor he's wearing, it's all in Haybot's colors.
Okay.
So, yeah, there is clearly a plot going on, even if it's not necessarily at the forefront of things.
Right.
Right. On to... actually, not Niall, did you watch Time Bokan this week?
I did.
So did I. It was an idol parody with Momotaro.
It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. It did smack of somebody who's been forced to spend his money on merchandise for an idol that he wasn't into. It did seem like somebody was getting their own personal feelings out in the script.
Yeah, a little bit like that. I was mostly enjoying because Malmar Tower is just this two-faced like lion scumbag. You know, he's Phoebe spinning some story to women to try and get him under his spell. And then when he turns away, you know, if he gets inner monologue, he pulls the greatest faces.
He does, yes. And it's like within three episodes, the villains are basically on the same side as the heroes at various points in this episode.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, basically he's running this scam in the past where women idolise him and then his two henchmen, who are a man in an ape mask and a man in a pheasant mask, go around and force the fathers and husbands and boyfriends to pay for all this merchandise. Which is where I was saying it felt like somebody, whoever wrote it, had encountered that situation himself.
Wayward daughter, perhaps?
Yes, spending a lot of money on idol merchandise he was getting no value from. And yes, so the two female leads end up getting, even though they initially go to give him a dressing down for taking advantage of these women, he uses his charms to seduce them as well. And so they end up selling parts of their mecha in order to pay for all this merchandise.
Well, selling them, but they get like forcibly like taken off.
That is true, yes. And then they get into a big battle.
Yeah. And Beetle Robot turns into a pirate.
Yes.
For some reason.
Because they've got they got the guy who did the very original Yasaman and Gundam mecha designs is doing the mecha designs on this as well. So the mecha designs are really good.
Yeah. I was liking as well when like when the Beetle Robots, you know, when they're just ripping off different parts of it, you know, for the bills of the things, you could see when it popped the leg off, it had like the little ball joint underneath it. So just like on the actual model you can buy in the shops.
Yes. And they had an explanation of why they can't use all of the 24 mecha on the roulette wheel as well. They had to excuse that in the plot. And also it became clear to me that they're going to have to think of a different Thunderbirds cockpit sequence gag every single episode at this point, because they've done one for each of the three episodes so far.
They wouldn't do it unless they had the idea stored up.
That is true, yes. But it was like a pachinko pinball machine this time. But yeah, it's a nice thing to watch on a Saturday afternoon, as is Classicaloid, which I take it we all watched this week.
Yep.
I actually did not get around to it.
No.
Oh, I know. I'm sorry. We've had visitors in the house. We've been entertaining them. So.
Get Music was this week's episode, which mainly focused on two things. Let me get their names out. Kanai's birthday, and also Sosuke trying to figure out how to activate the music power that Beethoven did the previous episode, because he wants to do it himself.
Yeah, like she's been kind of the girl's been really kind of passive aggressive, and she expects people to know it's her birthday coming, but she hasn't really told anyone.
And also, it actually just something I've not seen that debate where it makes the "ho ho ho, your breasts are small" joke.
Yeah,
but then it plays on the mind of the character who has that joke made on them for the entire episode.
Yeah, she really can't let shit go. I did like the way she was like laughing with her friends. It's like, hey, we're going to the thing later. You want to come? Oh yeah, that'd be great. And then turns into the really throwing a dirty look at her friend who said, hey, you've got small breasts earlier in the episode. Just like, dude, fucking, okay, I'm sorry. Jesus.
Yeah, but
she will not let their friend go.
Maybe that will make some writers think, you know, this is how people feel when you say those things.
Somebody. No, it's a setup for another joke.
It is.
At the end of the episode.
At the very end of the episode, which is based on truth that Mozart was a perverted man.
Yeah. So they actually have looked up some of their history besides, like, Beethoven, like, Gyoza, right? I'm pretty sure that's
yeah, I can't quite match that one up. But,
well, there's nothing to say he didn't not like Gyoza.
No.
Maybe he liked duck or something, and I don't know. Like, duck Gyoza, it's the same thing. I don't
he
know.
Does go, he does huh a lot, though. He is portrayed as being deaf. particularly this episode.
Well, he just sounds more and more like Joseph Joestar, which is great. Just shouting and not listening to what people are saying and just straight up ignoring people sometimes.
Yeah, Mozart takes it upon himself that Kanai is in love with him.
Yeah, because she doesn't want her friends to see him because she thinks it'd be weird if a school-going girl is living with a fucking man. And I guess it's a weird-ass man as well, so...
Yes.
But he's like, oh, she doesn't want her friends to see me. That must mean that she fancies me and wants me to herself, etc. So it's like, oh, brilliant. I'll sort this out.
I mean, but then you get this other plot of Sosuke trying to figure out how to activate the music, which leads to a very lengthy montage sequence. So they try to recreate the situation from the previous episode, which results in them, I would say, one point, it's actually at two points, bringing another demolition ball towards the house.
I did like, the plan was like, your man's like, okay, back it up. And, you know, she comes out of the house and he's like, what the fuck? Get that shit out of here. And they're like, okay, back it up. And then they try a bunch of other things. They go like, let's do it at night. Okay, bring it in. It's just like, guys, come on.
it's just like standing outside like Beethoven's like room and they say, sure, if you're off, I'll share the house will be demolished anytime soon. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
And all they seem to succeed in doing is making, is it Mozart very strong?
Yeah, they're trying to get him to do it because they figure he can do it as well.
Yes.
And they train him to the point like so he can lift up the little, what do you call the things, baton or... The conducting wand.
A baton, yes.
Okay, where he can lift that like up with a huge weight attached to it. Because as they were training in the woods, they kept getting attacked by bears. And eventually he manages to fend off the bear with the weight and the training wand and is like, and Beethoven's like, oh, excellent, now you've proved that you no longer need music to survive in the wild. And the guy's like, that's the opposite of what we were trying to do. It was pretty good.
Then it's when he brings her the dessert, isn't it? He gets slapped,
yeah,
and then that activates the powers. As he basically,
called a pervert and realizing his true perverted nature.
Yes, that reminded brings it out and now. Brought a memory back to him being slapped and being called a pervert because he brought one of those breast desserts out for her birthday.
Yeah, I mean the party was fine up to that point. They actually did a pretty good job.
And then that activated his music.
And you get a kind of pop version of what song is it?
I can't remember. I should make a note because I'm knowing that it's going to be 6 days before I talk about it.
I'm trying to think. I think it was a pastoral or it doesn't matter. Yeah,
they'd added lyrics to it. It's got lyrics to it, and yeah, to begin with, I wasn't fully on board, but by the end of it, I was very on board, as it's like, particularly because the spoonbill was imagining that it was like some sort of phoenix.
Yeah, I was getting involved in the action as well. I mean, like,
what's the type of bird? He's not a spoonbill.
Shoebill?
Shoebill, that's it.
Hornbill, maybe?
Some sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill.
I can't think of the name.
Strange bird. And that was always looks like amused with itself.
Yes. And I have a sneaking suspicion that's actually her dad. But that's probably because I've watched other anime where animals turn out to be somebody's relative. But I maybe
all the inheritance, having the surgery to get turned into a bird.
Yeah, the sequence wasn't as good this time around, but I mean, like, when you're missing out on giant mecha dancing.
Yeah, but I'll say by the end I was still on board, and then there's the... Once they go back to reality, the bird still thinks it can fly, and then we get a great little slapstick sequence of it leaping off the roof and hitting somebody in the head. How it gets up to the roof, I don't know, because it's often seen on the roof.
There's probably like a stairs going up there. Or something. It's a pretty crazy house with secret passages. So,
are they a flatless bird?
I imagine it's just
that clipped. Seems to be what's implied by the fact that it's in the music. It's imagining that it can fly, and then it can't fly at the end of the episode.
Okay,
maybe it can't fly very far. Maybe it's a bit like a chicken. It can just like hop.
It's some kind of stork, I understand. So then storks can fly.
Yeah. But maybe that beak, maybe evolution's dealt it a dodgy hand. They'll just start flying in circles.
It's not aerodynamically efficient.
I forgot to mention last week, there's another character, Pad, this tablet that says.
Oh, the fucking, that sarcastic tablet.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he says this episode. He gets some digging on Sosuke.
Yeah, I like the way your man powers him down. It's just like a friend you can turn off.
Quiet,
being an asshole.
Yeah, he just talks like a normal person. It doesn't have like a computerized voice either.
Yeah.
And it looks like next week it's Liszt and Chopin. We also saw some... it wasn't quite clear to me. Was one Tchaikovsky? I don't know who the other one was. That the two girl
the two
singers.
Sneaking up to the house? Or
I think it's Liszt and Chopin sneaking up to the house. But we get, okay. The episode opens with like this concert of... Oh, I can't remember what they're called now. But these two, like a pair of girls, idol singers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's listening to them on the on the iPad or whatever the hell the thing is.
Yes. Oh, and they discover that was the thing with Pad, is when he was filming music with Pad last time, we actually saw what Pad ended up filming, which was just everyone dancing in front of the building with like no special effects going on.
Which I thought made the video look better. You know, just a bunch of construction workers dancing. And I was like, this is pretty great.
And apparently this is like 24 episodes, 26 episodes.
Is that enough to get through all the composers it has? Or is that more than enough?
I think it's 8 in the opening credits, isn't there?
So. Okay. Right. So I was wondering if we were just going to get like one guy an episode or what way I was going to do it. One piece of music an episode.
That's what I thought, but I'm guessing probably not. I'm guessing we're going to get lots of different people show up.
Oh, I looked it up. A shoe bill is flightless. So, yeah.
All the clues were there.
Yourself,
call me the bird detective. Right, moving on to... Did we all watch Drifters?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
So, this appears to be a tale of men who cannot fight their nature. Which is a bit...
I can't stop being a dick.
Which was a bit like Helsing as well. He's like, I can't quite tell. I mean, it kind of feels like those three guys you're supposed to side with them, our heroes. But at the very same time, it also feels a bit like a nature documentary where it's like...
Well, especially with the dudes watching them going, what are they doing now?
Yes.
<You know.
laughs> Come see the dangerous samurai in their natural environment.
It's not their natural environment.
No,
they don't
it's true,
generally
yes.
live in Lord of the Rings land. But, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. Like, I think the suggestion is that these are our inverted commas heroes, but there are worse guys out there.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Even though these guys are fucking assholes for the most part.
I can't quite get my head around all the sides at the moment. Because basically, this episode mainly involves a guy showing up at the Elf Village and saying, we've got to punish you for helping the Drifters.
But, like, I wasn't entirely sure if he was a drifter at that stage, but it kind of becomes clear later on that he isn't.
Yep. Yeah, because it basically seems to be like some sort of men versus demi-humans thing going on in this world.
Yeah, they specifically mentioned, what is it, elves, dwarves, and hobbits.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I thought was great. I was just like, okay, that's what's happening.
We also see that there's another person in the hallway.
Who's yeah, further down people. The hallway or something.
Yes. Like,
in a black hallway or something. Yeah.
And they're she's recruiting for, what's the guy called?
The Black King.
That's it, yeah. Yes. So, I don't. This guy, I don't think it's working for the Black King, is it? The guy who's picking on the elves? He's like a separate faction?
He appears to be on, technically, the good guy's side.
He's like the church or what have you.
Is he working with the same guys who are watching them with binoculars? And
no, I think they're another faction.
Okay, I wasn't entirely sure because they were all wearing like white kind of stuff. I wasn't sure.
I think Octobrists.
Octobrists, I understand, I think they're all trying to scout out drifters, suitable ones who could probably persuade over to their side to, I don't know, are they a third party who'd be supplying the warriors then to whichever side of the conflict this is happening with, or are they trying? Well, this seems to pretty dimension. Like, we gotta get this to happen this way, otherwise, no, the world will be destroyed. So I guess they're going to be wanting to get good guys on the side.
But the crux of it is, this guy's brought some men into the Elf Village. There's signs of conflict in the distance from where the Drifters are, and they're like, they cannot fight their nature. They must go and see what's happening.
Well, initially, your man's just like, I'm going to pay those kids back, who literally fucking wandered into the woods again. Yeah. God damn it, kids, stop doing that.
Oh, yes, because they're being chased, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they're being chased by dudes on horseback. And he's like basically going to repay the favor. And Nobunaga's just like, ah, fuck it, I'll do it. Why not? I mean, like, he has ulterior motives after that straight away.
Yeah, he basically forces a town of pacifist elves to take up arms.
Yeah, he burns their entire field of crops. So it's like, okay, right. If they've got no pride and they've got nothing to live on, then they'll just fuck it. They'll be desperate. And if they're desperate, that means I can take them over.
Yes.
And I like the way the people, like the woman with the binoculars watching, is like the boss. He said he's going to capture the village. What? Not liberate the village? Not save the village? Like, no, capture the village. And it's just like, okay, he's on the fucking move now.
Yeah, they must conquer. That is their instinct.
Teuhisa just wants to fight.
Yeah.
He just dails straight into the village. Slicing people up.
Counting heads as he lops them, yeah.
Yeah, and throws his sword at the head guy.
Hmm.
And then chokes him out, disarms him.
He gets a weird kind of hold
in him with his leg and his arm kind of thing.
Gets on top of him and then just bludgeons his face in with his scarab.
I like the way Nobunaga's like, the anti-armor technique of beating the shit out of a dude with a stick. And I'm just like, dude, I think that's just an effective technique. I don't really, if you call it a technique. but that's the most
brutal thing I've seen in TV anime.
The others were like, holy shit. You know, they were all reacting the way I was. I was like, fucking hell. This is really quite violent.
And then he makes the elves kill him.
We did mention the last episode. They're not speaking the same. They're not speaking Japanese.
No, they're all speaking different languages. Yeah,
speaking like.
Yep. Is it just like sideways or backwards Japanese? What are they saying?
It sounds like the syllables are moved around because when some of them like run together, they sound a little like, because like all the inflection and everything that I know, it sounds just fine. So when they're getting angry, they sound angry. It doesn't sound really weird or anything. So I think they're taking just the Japanese words and just moving them around.
Yeah, that must be something along the lines of what they're doing. But yeah, it kind of comes up that nobody can, or at least the Japanese guys can't talk to anyone else in this thing. But it's like their intentions are made very clear by, you know, lopping heads off, pointing at sword, pointing at dude you just bludgeoned to half death. And it's like, okay, this is messed up.
Yeah, doesn't Shimazu say something like really... speak Japanese or die or something.
Yes.
He says that to the little kids, isn't he?
Yes, he does.
And then you gotta ask me for help, you little shits.
And then Nobunaga gives him some sass about it later. It's like, if you're getting sassed by Nobunaga about being racist.
I guess he's been here longer. He's kind of used to it at this rate.
Yeah, and obviously because also Nobunaga's like more forward-thinking because he's the guy with the gunpowder.
Briefly at the start, we saw, I believe, Julius Caesar and Hannibal getting into a fist fight over who stole whose strategy.
It's Hannibal and somebody. It's not Julius Caesar, but it is Hannibal.
No, because he says you Greek motherfuckers always stealing my shit.
No, it's a Roman guy. It's the guy who...
Sorry.
It's, goodness knows, is it Scipio or Scipio?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. He was a general. But yeah, just those... And it's... I like the way they're talking about stealing each other's battle tactics and shit, but they're just like having a fist fight.
And it's the fact they're elderly as well.
There's two old dudes fighting, sir. It's, what should I do? It's like, I should probably stop them.
Continue observing.
And we got opening credits as well.
Yep.
Which has singing dwarves in it.
Well, everyone's singing.
Everyone's singing, but the first ones are dwarves. And that was like, yeah, excellent. And then you see all the other drifters we're going to meet. Like, can't wait to meet all these guys.
Mm. I can't wait to see a biplane versus a dragon.
Yeah,
that's gonna be cool.
There's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Yeah, this is turning into a really good campaign.
Yes. I'm fully on board with this. And if you're missing crazy violence in your anime, Drifters is here for you. Because boy, that bludgeoning, man.
Yeah, it's not shying away. There's no like shadowing being put over it. So JoJo does. No, you've seen that guy get his head caved in.
When he's running around like lopping heads and counting them, it's kind of like a quick slash and a dude screaming and a big scout of blood. But this is like very slow, and the dude's still alive afterwards. He's just not going to get up from this. that kind of thing. It's just like, fucking hell, this is really bad.
Yeah,
the slowness of it, I guess. The slow deliberateness of it.
Yeah, and like I say, it's made clear that there's even worse people here.
Yeah, somehow.
Which is kind of a bit like Helsing. It's like, I can't quite, yeah. But I bet there's still the worst people are also kind of cool people.
Probably. They'll probably have some cool kind of thing going on with them. Yeah.
Right. Final thing to talk about. Yuri on Ice, Episode 3. I am Eros, and Eros is me. Face off, Hot Springs on Ice. This was some good anime.
It was really good. Again, who would have thought that figure skating would need to know such intensely emotional and skillful confrontation? Anime can truly work miracles for any activity or sport you can name.
But it's how well put together the show is in general, like that really helps it out. Yeah. Am I wrong in thinking like this is like the best thing out right now?
It's between this and Dragon Ball Super. It's pretty close.
Yeah,
they're kind of going for different audiences, sure, but it's really good.
This would have the popular vote, I think, where anybody who's seen it would say, "Yeah, this is probably the objectively best thing out
until
there."
Next week. Next week, I believe the popular vote for Dragon Ball Super may go quite high as more people get to watch it.
Yeah, maybe
that's true.
Catch the fever.
It requires less foreknowledge than just what's introduced at
that's
the start.
True,
yeah.
So basically, this episode covers them training during the week and the actual competition at the end of the week.
How many fucking episodes would another anime have dragged this out to?
Well, they have one episode of them training and finding their motivation, their meaning, and what they want to bring to the dance.
And then the actual competition, but yeah, all handled in one. And this,
and
it doesn't feel packed for it, you know.
And Yuri brings his lust for
pork balls,
yes, and
yeah, because he's never. Well, I mean, like he's been training since he was like in his teens and shit. So it's not really he's had a chance to get with women and stuff.
Yes. So did your brain go to the gutter when he goes to visit the ballet trainer late at night?
I think that was the idea behind it.
It was, because they planted
woman,
it.
I need you to teach me something.
Yeah, they planted it the previous episode when Victor asks him if there was some sort of relationship between them.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's definitely meant to... Like, it's been doing that as well, like in the first episode where he's doing the sequence for his former love or the girl he liked or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but he knows she's married. It's kind of like leading your audience mind down one way, but actually going a different way with it. So it did that really well, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was going the other way, and I was thinking, you know, just whether.
No, sorry, go on.
I was thinking, all the moments that Yuri and Victor have shared now, where Victor's getting a little bit kind of too familiar, shall we say? And thinking, I thought he was maybe going to the back teacher trying to sensei. Can you teach me how to, like, you know, like, attract a man, you know, that sort of a way?
I mean, like, in a way, that's kind of what happens.
Yeah. Because I thought, like, you know, like, maybe he's, like, feeling something inside himself towards Victor. And I thought, I'm going to, like, you know, dance for him. And that will be the thing that will inspire my performance.
I'm pretty sure the person Victor's the most in love with, though, is Victor.
Yeah. I think that's probably the case. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas Yuri has to discover his sensuality, his sexuality. The other guy has to discover his innocence.
Yes, like agape.
Agape,
yeah. Innocent love or something like that? Undying love or something. I forget the actual translation, yeah. But along those lines, yeah.
What's this? The words are tipping my tongue.
It's the highest form of love, charity, the love of God for man and of man for God.
Yeah. It's this kind of like higher, more abstract thing, especially to Yurio. He's very much so, like, he gets the movements down pretty much straight away, but he doesn't have the feeling of agape.
And so he thinks about his grandfather, but when he does the final performance, he's still so focused on getting the moves right that he apologizes to his grandfather that he couldn't think of him.
Yeah. And you kind of see, and I think it's really subtle how it does it, how Yuri wins the contest despite not being as skilled at performance.
Yeah, well, and also for doing a move he was told not to do, which then cocks up.
But he put more of, I guess, himself into it.
He figured it out a little better with the initially his thought was like, I'm going to become a pork bowl.
Pork bowl, yes.
Yeah. I'm going to become that, but then he realizes I don't want to be. I am not trying to express my love for that. I'm trying to express what that instills in other people. I want to be the pork bowl, that kind of thing. So it's like when he goes to your one, he wants her to teach him how to move like a woman.
Because we get the story of what the dance is supposed to represent.
Yeah.
In sort of bringing back the style of some of the bits from a woman called Fujiko Mine.
Yeah.
Where it's like a tale of a woman and a playboy. And because he's copying Victor, he's trying to be the playboy. And then he realizes, I can't be the playboy, but I can be the woman.
Yeah. I get what he's going with. Like, basically, he's trying to portray to the audience that he is a thing that is desirable, whereas what the other guy was, he was trying to portray his love for his grandfather, and it's a more abstract thing to try and.
Yeah, but I think he was saying that. I think Yurio was saying that he couldn't even do that because he was so focused on getting the moves right.
Yeah. It's like if Yuri nailed the emotion, but not necessarily like the technique, then Yurio did the opposite. He got the technique down, but not necessarily the full extent of the emotion he's trying to portray.
Yeah, and in that way, Yurio lost it. He didn't express the feeling of the piece properly, even though he got the moves correct. That kind of way, yeah. It's an interesting way to show it, like, and I think without out loud saying it, like, it does a really good job of expressing that.
Yeah, and all the supporting characters are a lot of fun still.
Oh, yeah. Everyone gets like a little bit, like it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I liked the mother of the triplets. You know, she takes like a maternal kind of shine to Yurio. She's kind of worrying after him, and she sees him when he's leaving early. You know, he didn't even stay to the end of the performance. You know, he knows that he's lasting, and she's kind of worrying after him. So she's kind of that emotion's kind of coming across in her. Yeah.
And it was nice to see him kind of like because he needed to open up a little to get across the agape, the him drop his guard a little, and he becomes like, as Yuri says himself, like, it's like, whoa, it's like he's like a little kid all of a sudden. I forgot he's a little kid that I'm dealing with here.
Oh, he also does a load of training around temples as well, doesn't he?
Well, that's Victor's suggestion. Yes. Maybe the temple again.
And Victor, of course, by the end of the week, has forgotten why they're having the contest.
And it's like, well, when we win, like, you're going to fulfill your promise, right, Victor? And he's like, totally. What was that again?
I wonder if Victor's boozing is going to be a thing which is going to have a deeper meaning later in the series.
Yeah, cause... I'm not entirely sure, because like part of it seemed to be suggesting that he doesn't give a fuck about them and he's just going off having a laugh in Japan. But the other part was like he's kind of happy that they're teaching each other stuff even though they're competing.
Yeah.
I think was he leaving them to their own devices kind of thing? Was that part of his plan? It's hard to say. Or is he just being a selfish prick?
But yeah, as we said at the start, it's very good.
Mm.
You gotta be watching this. This episode, there was like one shot didn't look super great, and unfortunately, it's like right at the end of Yuri's routine. But I saw people saying how he didn't look as good as the previous episodes, but I still thought it was very good animation on the actual ice skating.
Mm-hmm. It's really nice how they've basically like, and I imagine like a little bit rotoscope to some extent, but they redo the animation with the performance costumes on, and it feels slightly different as well. Like they loosen it up a little, make it more like it's a more finished piece. So it's like you see the rougher animation before you see the more finished animation, in that you see the rougher training before you see the performance. And I was like, that's really nice. That's it's a nice way to do it.
Good stuff. So, I think that wraps up another week's episode of Let's Go JoJo. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, please check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamiteinthebrain.com. Plus, subscribe to our YouTube channel to listen live. Goodbye.
Bye. Ciao.